Senator Mearmont, back to you.
Now, tribal perspective, and I guess we're going to go in order. And if anybody doesn't object to that, I'll introduce.
Lynn is shaking her head no. Could you jump in, Lynn?
That must be the important email that I've yet to be able to reach for.
Yes. Thank you.
Well, take over, Lynn. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. So the tribal representatives have asked that they be introduced together, and then they will be sharing the time. And there is one person who is not a chief or an ambassador, so he will be speaking after the rest. So yes, that was all in that important email I sent you.
Thank you. It does not help being in the committee room at all. My internet went down and I didn't want to miss a thing. So thank you.
Do you have the agenda with the individuals named in front of you?
I just gave it back. Hold on. Yes, I do.
So we do have tribal representatives that are on the Zoom link who will be presenting on the perspective collectively and from each of their tribes. We have Chief Clarissa Sabatis from the Houlton Band of the Maliseet Indians. We have Chief William Nichols Sr. from the Passamaquoddy Tribe Indian Township. We have Ambassador Mulin Dana, who is the Penobscot Nation Tribal Ambassador. And we have Joseph Sakabason, who is the former chief from the Passamaquoddy Tribe in the Indian Township. So welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. Did you want us to go ahead and start in the order that you had on the agenda? I think I have some things I wanted to just highlight that we've been doing, but I think that we definitely have some collective issues that we might talk about together. So I'll just go ahead. I'm Chief Clarissa Sabatis from the Houlton Band of Maliseet Indians, in case you don't have your agenda in front of you. So our natural resources program has been doing a lot of work with many federal partners, some state partners, but one of the biggest things that we've been working on, at least during my tenure and you know prior to my my position as chief, is restoration and fish passage. You know, we're currently working with the local town and with U.S. Fish and Wildlife and the Nature Conservancy on culvert removal. The culvert that we're working on, I guess, had been identified in 2010, and it currently is the highest priority in the watershed. our staff had worked alongside the town to help bring federal dollars to the area under FEMA for pre-disaster mitigation. So we're hoping that we'll be moving on that this summer, late spring, early summer. But it's been a long time in the making, so it's a really huge success, even though it's maybe something small within the watershed. So we also have been working with the US EPA and with DFO in Canada, so Department of Fisheries and Oceans, I believe, our US Fish and Wildlife and NOAA, along with the Maliseet First Nations in Canada, on a lot of transboundary work. All of that encompasses genomic research to help bring the right strains of salmon and other migratory fish to our watershed or back to the watershed. And we've also been, you know, working with the other Maliseet First Nations and the Canadian and U.S. government with regards to dam removal and fish passage, with the main issues being on the Canadian side. We've done data collection and found par and fry, salmon par and fry, in the Medexnikeg, but on the Canadian side. So it gives us hope, but you know, I think we have a long ways to go. So we're really doing our due diligence and trying to take care of our river on this side too, with many projects that we've been working on with restoration of our river. You know, logging Medexnikeg here in Arista County has a history of logging, and I think it really damaged the fish habitat habitat along the years, and we've seen the loss of salmon and decrease in others. And then we've done some really wonderful projects in partnership with local partners and with federal partners. So we also are working on long-term planning projects. I think we have about 8 of them in partnership with USDA and NRCS. And, you know, that encompasses all the stuff that I've been talking about, and then others as well, including LWIVES. And LWIVES, I think, is something, you know, we've been included in just recently. I think the St. John watershed had not been included, or representation from the St. John watershed had not been included in the LWIVE Action Committee for its tenure. And over the last 6 months or so, we now have representation. So those are traditionally found in our river and our watershed. So those things are all priorities to us. And I think that having that voice there when all the decisions are being made about restoration and so on is has been good for us. I'm trying to think. We have some other things to talk about around, I think, alver fishing, but I'm going to leave that for one of the other leaders to bring up. I think there's an issue that's come up, and they've done a lot of work up front with that, so I'm going to leave that for Passamaquoddy. I do want to just touch on some things that have caused a little heartburn in the past, I think. Before I was a tribal leader, I had come and presented to your committee about moose hunting. I know that each of our tribes are different, and we all have you know, different infrastructures. We have a very small land base, so we don't have our own game wardens and law enforcement. But we had come in the past to talk about the potential of having, you know, a small percentage of moose permits dedicated to our tribe. This is something that, you know, it's been a traditional food source for thousands of years for us. And currently it's difficult to have access because we have to compete in a lottery with everyone in the state. You know, we experience higher rates of poverty and health disparities, even in comparison to those communities that are immediately surrounding us. And I think it's hard to swallow when we know that there are permits that are dedicated to hunting lodges and businesses to auction off for thousands of dollars when we're really just trying to feed our people. When somebody gets a moose permit and they get a moose, they're feeding multiple families. And so, you know, it's not sport. It's really about sustenance for us. And, you know, I know that we are working on a larger bill around all of these things, but I think that, you know, for us, if we don't have the current infrastructure like some of the other tribes, we're going to have to continue with our current structure until we're able to you know, build on that. And so regardless of what happens with that, I think that's one of the things that's always been a priority, is trying to find a way for us to really practice our traditional hunting. I'm not going to take up any more time. I'm sure I'll be joining in for the rest of the conversation. Those are a few things that I really wanted to highlight.
Thank you, Chief. One quick question is, can your tribal representatives present bills, even if they don't have a separate vote from your district?
So we don't have a tribal representative right now. We can always work with other representatives in our area. That's not a problem. But I know that in the past, our tribal rep had brought that, and it was not passed. That's not something that's we're not able to do. But I know that it hasn't been successful in the past. Really, the sentiment that I got was, you should just apply like everybody else.
No, it's a new day. I'll talk to Representative Newell about the possibilities when I talk to her next. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And Then I guess we are going in order. Chief Nicholas of the Passamaquoddy Tribe from Indian Township, that would be you if that's current. I think it is. And welcome.
Chief Nicholas is unable to be here today. And I guess if we go in order, next would be the Ambassador Milian Dana.
Okay, that's great. Welcome, Ambassador Dana. Thank you for that. Nope.
Good morning. Thank you for having us here today. I think on a broad scale, this is a really important step you're all taking. I think that, you know, committee briefings by tribal leaders and this many tribal leaders is a really neat thing. So thank you for that open spirit of friendship and collaboration. I think Chief Sabatis did a really great job honing in on really some specific programs her tribe is doing. At Penobscot Nation, we also have a very vibrant natural resources department. We're doing a lot of air quality testing, water quality. The Penobscot River is our ancestral homeland. So obviously we are very connected to the river. It is part of our nation. And a lot of our efforts in everything we do is around the restoration and health of the river. It's kind of ironic that one of the most tense parts of the relationship between the Penobscot Nation and the state has been the health of the Penobscot River. Also, some of the greatest successes around environmental issues is also around the river. You see the Penobscot River Restoration Project that removed dams, and we've seen a great return in fish species, including salmon. So it's, as usual, complicated and a mixed bag, I think, but part of the healing in this relationship is ongoing consultation and collaboration. And I think looking at this session of the legislature, we'll be looking at, you know, those large changes that we brought to the 129th legislature when it comes to the Maine Indian Land Claims Settlement Act. And I think that when we get into the nitty-gritty on those recommendations, it will affect all areas. So I don't believe this committee will be seeing that bill, but I think it's important that you're all aware of the need to recognize our inherent tribal sovereignty, and that cuts across all areas. You know, we are very capable stewards of our lands and waters, and that extends to marine resources, that extends to all fisheries, including saltwater fisheries. And over these 40 years that we've been living since that 1980 Settlement Act, we've been able to, you know, really do some remarkable things, even though we've been under this oppressive act. And I think part of the task of tribal leaders in this session is advocating for education and communication around tribal sovereignty. What does it mean? What does it look like? What doesn't it look like? Why is it something we should all embrace as Mainers and not something to be afraid of or threatened by? So we don't have time to get into all of that today, but I really hope that discussions like this really plant seeds as we go through this session. So if a bill comes to your committee and there's implications for tribes, or if you think there might be, now you have places to go to, myself, Representative Newell, the leaders on this call, where you can talk about, you know, does this have an effect on tribes? How does this affect tribal sovereignty and how the state of Maine recognizes it. I was part of the Permanent Commission on the Status of Indigenous Racial and Tribal Groups over the summer, and we did this exercise with lawmakers where each commissioner was a chair of a subcommittee, and we looked at all of the bills that potentially could come into a special session, and we worked with our lawmakers looking at these bills through a lens of social and racial equity. And I saw some really great things happen in that process, even though obviously we didn't come into a special session and address any of these bills. But seeing representatives and senators having to rank these bills and having to think about everything through this new lens gave, I think, everyone a really neat perspective on the whole thing. So I think we can apply kind of the same exercise in regards to tribal sovereignty in committee work and as we go into the larger bodies. When we look at these bills, how is this affecting tribes? Even if you don't think it might, it's probably worth exploring a little bit if it does. So I'm really hopeful going into this session. I think that discussions like this are a really excellent start. You have some great resources in the tribal leaders. Presently, I know Representative Newell has some really excellent bills that she's sponsoring this session as well that that really deserve your attention and support. So I guess I'll leave it there, and I'll be around for more conversation as well. And, you know, thinking about marine resources made me think about the situation in Canada over the summer with a Mi'kmaq tribe, the lobster fishermen, and the ugliness that can come about when we're not understanding jurisdiction and inherent tribal sovereignty. So the remedy to that is open communication and consultation. So I'm really glad to see that happening here. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. That's great. I think if any questions come up, we'll do it at the end. We'll let everybody speak. That's best. But you're always welcome to contact us. We all want to keep this communication open. It wasn't just for a one-time briefing, just so you know that we're here. And I think we've made that clear when you could come to the room. We've had some great conversations. But thank you very much for taking the time today.
Thank you.
And we'll move on to Joseph Succa Basin, former chief of the Passamaquoddy tribe at Indian Township. Please.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you again. First off, I just would like to thank the committee for taking the opportunity to do this briefing with us today. It's been difficult under the since the pandemic to do things like this. And I just want to kind of talk about recent history over the last 9 or 10 years, elver fishing, and the number of fishermen we have out on the that participate in this. But if I could go back to 2012, when this all really became the price skyrocketed, and we saw a large number of fishermen on from the tribe side, or a large number of members who wanted to participate in this fisheries. We issued nearly 500 permits that year, or four something, I don't remember the exact number, but and this was during my time as chief. So we felt the need that we need to really take a look at this, and we rewrote our saltwater fishing ordinances at that time. And now we had, meeting with Commissioner Kelleher, he was concerned about the number of gear that was in the water at that time. And we felt that wasn't the most responsible way to manage this resource. So we imposed a quota on our fishermen. I think it was 2 years in advance before the state had imposed a quota. I think it was 2000, it might have been a year before. I guess all that doesn't matter at this point. But, and we had originally set that at 3,600 pounds. At that point, we had nearly 700 fishermen within a couple of years that were out on the banks of the river. And we caught somewhere around 2,000 pounds. So when the state had imposed its quota, we would get allocated roughly 14% of that, or 1,700 pounds the first year it was imposed. The following year, the state's was reduced, therefore ours was reduced to 1,356 pounds, or 1,400 pounds. Currently it's 1,356. But one of the key things during this time was there was constant consultation with the tribe. Under the former Governor LePage, we would receive a letter in September of October prior to the season coming up that following spring. And we would go down and meet with the governor, meet with the commissioner, voice our concerns, and we would come to an agreement on where we thought we should be for the upcoming season. And that worked out pretty well. We didn't always get what we wanted, but in the end, we always agreed that this is how we're going to move forward, and this is how we're going to best protect the resource. In the last couple of years, under the current Governor Mills, that we've lost that consultation. The commissioner is still there, and I'm not sure, you know, this could be pandemic related, or whatever it may be, but I would love to have the opportunity to have that consultation again. Where that that consultation would have been important when we received these CARES Act funds back in May, $20 million to saltwater fisheries. Recently, checks have been allocated to all our tribal fishermen, nearly 700 who qualified for that. And they received $6,155, which is going to create a whole lot of other issues that I won't touch on today. And I think we could have avoided some of these issues had we had the opportunity to have that consultation. So if anything comes of this today, I'm hoping, and I know the commissioner is on, or I at least see his name on, I hope that's something moving forward we can start to do again. So with that, I guess that's all I have to offer at this point. I would be at the end, when all of us have had time to present, I'd be happy to answer any questions if there are any for me.
Thank you, Chief. That was great. Good points. And I did hear some talk about wanting to figure out a distribution system that would work for both sides. And I do believe the pandemic has affected things like that, that if we could get together, I know more would be happening. But we'll just be moving ahead from here and figuring out how to make a lot of things work better. So thank you. And to move on to Michael Corey Hinton from the Passamaquoddy Tribe at Pleasant Point. And welcome.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you, members of the committee. Representative Rena Newell is here, and I'd like to acknowledge her and see if the representative has a couple of words that she might want to say before I speak any. All I want.
Certainly, always welcome. Hello.
Good morning, everyone. Chi Willy Wen Corey for my introduction. I just want to say hi to everyone. Thank you for holding this important discussion. I welcome the words of Chief Sabatis and former Chief Joe Salkabason, as well as Ambassador Mully and Dana. I think my purpose in jumping on this call is basically to listen as well. And if I can add to the conversation at the end, I certainly will. So at this point, I'll turn it back over to Corey Hinton. Again, Chi Willy Wen.
Thank you, Representative. Hi, everybody. My name is Corey Hinton. I am an attorney for the Passamaquoddy Tribe. Chief Elizabeth Maggie Dana asked me to speak in her stead. There was unfortunately a death in the community over the weekend, and as chief, it's her responsibility to be with the family at this time. So thank you for your understanding and respect for our traditions. I'm grateful for the opportunity to be here today with you all virtually. I was able to be before this committee in the 129th legislature when we were talking about the Settlement Act proposed revisions. And so if what I'm going to say here is sort of rehashing anything that members of that past legislative committee may have heard, I apologize. I thought it might be helpful to talk a little bit about the Passamaquoddy Tribe, Beskidamagadi Tribe, in our culture, which I think will provide proper context for how we approach marine resources issues. In English, we say Passamaquoddy. In our language, it's Beskidamagadi. Beskum means pollock. Beskidamagadi means people who spear pollock. Pollock, I think, as you know, everyone here knows, is a sea-run fish. It's a fish that clearly our people survived upon. It is absolutely 100% ingrained in our identity, who we are. The ability to access saltwater resources is the lifeblood of our people. That is why when our treaties were negotiated, access to saltwater was explicitly reserved as a part of that. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about the Treaty of 1794. The Treaty of 1794 was negotiated following the American Revolution after representatives and warriors for all of the bands and tribes represented here sacrificed their lives to help establish the United States of America. Our chiefs, Passamaquoddy, Penobscot, Malafy signed agreements with George Washington. George Washington and his lieutenants formed a contingent of Wabanaki warriors that then went to battle against the British in exchange for future treaties and protections of our lands and resources. Following the American Revolution, there were treaty negotiations, and those negotiations for the Passamaquoddy tribe resulted in the Treaty of 1794, which reserved the two communities that we now refer to as Indian Township and Pleasant Point. That's Madakmigook and Jibayig in our language. And it also reserved 15 islands in the St. Croix River between Madakmigook and the Head of Tides in Calais. It also reserved the community of Jibayig, which means at the edge, which is, you know, where the community is. It's at the edge of what's Maine now, right on the saltwater. And it also reserved what we call carrying places. And so the treaty specifically calls out a number of locations that are all located on saltwater, places from which Passamaquoddy tribal members would fish and engage in commerce. Our trade networks were expansive. There are village sites in Maine that date thousands of years back that have items that were carried from many thousands of miles away from the Great Lakes. We saw copper metals, for example, and evidence of our seashells and our marine prowess turned up in places further south from here and out west. Evidence that our people were actively engaged in fishing and commerce. And obviously the Penobscots to our south were our closest trade partners, you know, south in Maine, meaning our fishermen and our seamen were traveling up and down the coast of the what's now the United States, and were traveling through networks of rivers connecting through the Great Lakes that went, you know, east and west, essentially across North America. Those rights were insisted upon. And in fact, the original treaty negotiations, what was on the table did not include Pleasant Point. And the Passamaquoddy leadership, the chiefs in the 1790s, said there will be no treaty without Pleasant Point. Pleasant Point and our access to that traditional fishing village, that ancient fishing village, is absolutely critical to who we are, because that is quite literally, you know, why Peskidamagadi, why the best gum is there, because that's where the pollock would gather. And there were stories. I mean, you can talk to elders now about, you know, even as recently as the 50s and 60s, people would go out with nets at night and throw in the nets, and the pollock would come, and you could pull out, you know, many, many pollock just like that, because they gathered right there on the banks of the reservation. You know, that's an activity that is currently inhibited by the Maine Indian Claim Settlement Act. That is an activity, that act of primordial sustenance, taking care of one's family, is something that through access to saltwater is something that's not spelled out in the Settlement Act. And so it's something that, you know, was intentionally left out, actually, because the issue of access to saltwater resources is so critically important. It wasn't dealt with in any way, shape, or form in the Settlement Act. The Maine Constitution requires the upholding of these treaty obligations. Although it is an unprinted part of the Maine Constitution, the original sections, Section 5 of Article 10 of the Maine Constitution, which is ordered to not be printed, specifically required the state of Maine to uphold treaty obligations entered into with tribes. And so the Passamaquoddy rights to engage in fishing throughout the St. Croix watershed and in the salt waters is, you know, essentially explicitly a part of the Maine constitutional framework, even though it's not ordered to be printed. But even when it was not ordered to be printed in the 1870s, there was a note made that those provisions are to be kept in full force. Okay. And so the Maine Constitution and the state of Maine has never voided those treaty obligations. At Passamaquoddy, we believe that those are our treaty obligations that still exist. They were written in the blood of our warriors who gave their lives for the American democracy. And that is why our tie to marine resources is so critically important. In our culture, We relied on a symbiotic relationship with the marine environment, never taking more than you need. Because if you did, it meant the next time you needed it, it wouldn't be there. It wouldn't be there to sustain. And so the way that we view ourselves in the world is in constantly trying to seek a balance and to preserve and manage and coexist with resources, both marine and non-marine. Okay. And so when we talk, just to fast forward to where we are today and what may come before you in some way, shape, or form with respect to proposed changes to the Settlement Act, we're seeking a cooperative relationship. It's a relationship that, you know, ironically enough, we saw more success in prior administrations. We very much desire to have government-to-government consultation. We very much desire to have cooperative management relationships with the state of Maine and among the Wabanaki Nations. In states across the United States where there are positive tribal-state relations, you most frequently see wonderful collaborations between tribes and states for the betterment of fisheries. Chief Sabatis eloquently spoke to the work in the Maliseet watershed, and I'll speak just to a moment, for a moment, about the work that Passamaquoddy's done in the Skudik and the St. Croix watershed. We're engaged in the same sort of activities on both sides of the border. Our band in Canada is involved in dam removal in Milltown/Incallis. We are doing that in the name of restoring sea-run fish. Alewives and focus on restoring the health of alewives is absolutely paramount to what we do. And so removing the dam, bring back the alewives, we hope will bring back the pollock, the salmon, the eels, all the fish that we have traditionally relied upon. And when we talk about eels, I just want to say that I've read the treaty notes. I read the letters that the chiefs wrote to Massachusetts in the 1790s. Access to eels for the Passamaquoddy is arguably the single most important fishing right that we have. It was spelled out in those treaty notes. That's why the treaty requires that the tribal members have access without, and I quote, hindrance or molestation to the fisheries resources in both branches of the Skudik River. So that's a little bit of background about the Passamaquoddy connection to marine resources, which is as old as the world. These are ancient rights. We have exercised them continuously, continuously. We have never stopped exercising access to saltwater fishing rights. There are state laws that will say, you know, this is how many numbers there are of licenses that you can issue. I will respectfully say, I'm not sure that those are legal. I will respectfully say that when there are times of crisis, when there are times when people are going hungry, we turn to the water. During the pandemic, when our people were going hungry and they couldn't leave, our fishermen were out in the bays. And they were not fishing just to, you know, make a point. They were fishing for survival. That's why we do what we do. That's why we are the best good of Magadi. Wally Wan.
Wow, thank you.
All right, so committee, any questions? And also I just comment that we had an abrupt end to the work we were doing with the tribes, and I look forward to getting back to it, obviously, because it's going to affect so many pieces of this puzzle that have gone awry over the years, and especially when I realized how differently Maine tribes have been treated than others all over the country. So I want an end to this, or at least a better middle. And I don't see any hands. And you are welcome to come back. Oh, Representative McCray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to say thank you. I was fortunate enough last session to be able to hear in Veterans and Legal Affairs, as well as Judiciary, as well as Marine Resources, the issues that you've all brought up. And one of the members pointed out that moose hunting, for example, would be under IFNW, that committee's jurisdiction, but it's still really important for us to know the big picture of how pervasive this is. The so many bills died when we weren't able to come back, and I believe that included some of what was put forward out of the permanent commission. So I'm going to look at Representative Newell's bills and others, but is that bill brought back, do you know, or pieces of that? We'll have various different bills, but
I can grab that if we like. We will be bringing it back. It'll look largely the same. We've removed gaming to make gaming its own standalone bill. So our large omnibus bill will be those recommendations to amend the Settlement Act, and that will be sponsored by Representative Talbot Ross. And then the gaming bill will be represented by Representative Collings. There we go.
Okay, great. I'll hear that in BLA. And I think, and as you said, multiple other bills as well. The work to improve what we've done about systemic racism and bringing more diversity, we have bills on that, but I have every expectation that's going to continue, and it needs to. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. And Representative Bloom.
Thank you. I have a question about eel fishing by the tribes, and you say it's a historical fishery. At what life cycle, at what life stage do you use the eels, and is it for, do you eat them, or what is it that you fish them for? I assume it's for food, but at what life cycle do you do that? At what point in their life?
I'm looking to the Passamaquoddy leaders. I'm happy to take this question, but Councilor, Representative, do you want me to? Okay.
Go ahead, Corey.
There is an eel clan. Eels have been used in various life stages for ceremonial and sustenance purposes. Historically speaking, the eels that would be used by the tribal members were those that, you know, the bigger ones that you could, you know, quite literally, you know, harvest and feed a family with. But historically speaking, the tribe used, like it did for many types of mammals and animals, eels in various life stages. I know that right now, you know, generally speaking, you can't harvest eels above a certain size unless there are specific conservation measures that are being practiced, but those are the very eels that the tribe historically subsisted upon, and that was a very, very serious part of the tribe's subsistence diet was eel, and so eating the eels is something that we've always done.
Thank you
Representative Bloom and Mr. Hinton. Okay, so if there's no shame in ending early, if there are no more questions, which I do not see any, we're going to wrap it up. That ends the agenda for today. And thank you very much for being here. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Committee for listening. Great questions. And thank you, Representative McCrate. You run a wonderful meeting. So